Welcome back to Insight on Cap Radio. I'm Beth Ruyak. Bernie won big, Biden was second. That's a very general summary, though not quite 100% yet, of the Democratic caucus in Nevada on Saturday. There's, of course, more to know than that. Cap Radio's state government reporter Scott Rodd was in Reno for Saturday's caucusing. He's back. He's in the studio with me. Hi, Scott.
Good morning, Beth.
So this isn't quite in the books yet. Let's do some updating. First of all, Pete Buttigieg, what's going on there?
So without 100% reporting yet, about 96% of precincts reporting, it's clear that Sanders won by a wide margin. But Pete Buttigieg is coming out and asking for the release of some data behind some of the early voting or early caucusing in Nevada. And it seems like they're, you know, he may be trying to claw back some delegates that may have gone to Biden, may have gone to some other moderate Democrats. And, you know, this at this point, you know, this early on in the race, every delegate kind of counts in terms of momentum and thinking about, you know, how they're going into some of the bigger races coming up, especially on Super Tuesday. In the grand scheme of things, a couple delegates here or there, you know, that's not really going to make a huge difference at the end. But early on, you know, that momentum plays a big factor.
So with, as you said, 96% reporting, Bernie Sanders has 47%. Joe Biden, 20. Pete has 14%. Elizabeth Warren, 10%. Those are rounded numbers. But the way the delegates break down is pretty interesting. Bernie Sanders takes 14 delegates from Nevada. Joe Biden in second only gets 4. Pete Buttigieg would have 2 and Elizabeth Warren, 0. So even one direction or the other this early in the race. And then, as you said, when you come up to Super Tuesday, the numbers can add up dramatically.
Exactly. Yeah. So again, you know, looking at it percentage wise, you'd think it might be, you know, a little more kind of the delegates might reflect those percentages a bit more. But yeah, this early on, you know, momentum is everything. And so, you know, if Pete Buttigieg believes, if the campaign believes that they can claw back a couple of delegates here or there, they're going to try. And in Iowa, they're actually calling for some targeted recounts as well. You know, there still isn't a clear, defined or declared winner yet from Iowa. That's partly because the race was so close, partly also because there was a mishap with the app that was used to count delegates or votes, rather.
Right.
So still some confusion there. But again, you'll see this early on, you know, that campaigns are really trying to do everything they can to carve out delegates.
So the New York Times has an article titled Five Takeaways from the Nevada Caucuses, the big one being that Bernie Sanders takes control. But the other points that this article makes is that the rest of the field isn't shrinking. Joe Biden's highest finish is still only second place, and that Pete Buttigieg wants to be the anti-Bernie. So tell me about your weekend there and how people were talking about the different candidates.
So the caucus site that I went to was at the University of Nevada, Reno. And this, it should be said, you know, young voters definitely leaning further to the left probably than other precincts or other caucus sites. You know, a lot of college voters out, and Bernie has a very strong support base among college voters. So at the caucus site that I was at, which included 7 precincts, it was a very strong Bernie turnout. I believe he won each of those precincts, and the only others to get to become viable for delegates from those precincts were Elizabeth Warren and Amy Klobuchar. So, you know, he had a very strong turnout. And just seeing the process unfold was very interesting, especially for these, you know, young voters. It was sort of heartening to see that, you know, people who were, you know, just turning voting age or, you know, just in the early 20s being so engaged in the process.
Was this one of those where you stood in the area where the candidate was who you wanted, and then depending on how it unfolded, you had to move and join another candidate's group standing in a location?
Exactly. I mean, it's a very physical process. So,
yeah.
You know, for California voters, they're used to either mailing in a ballot, maybe going in and casting a ballot in person. This is a very involved process. Sometimes it can last up to, you know, it could be hours, 3 hours sometimes. The caucus that I went to, it was very smooth. It was much shorter than that. It was about an hour and a half. But the way it works is you each precinct has a little area in a room, and you know, you divvy up based on who you support, and you physically move to that location. After that count, then each group gets an opportunity to kind of make their sales pitch to say, hey, you know, Bernie folks, I think you should come support Biden. You know, Pete Buttigieg folks, I think you should come support Warren. And that, for me, was one of the most compelling aspects of it. And we have some tape from those moments of the different campaign groups making their pitch.
Hi, everyone. I'm Mackenzie, and I'm here for Biden today. I truly believe that he is a candidate that can beat Trump and help reunite this country and reestablish the environmental policies and the healthcare policies that Trump has taken away from us.
Hi, everyone. I'm Connor, and I think you should realign with Mayor Pete, especially because of his healthcare policy. He doesn't force people who are stuck on the privatization of healthcare to switch over right away. He's going to provide a path that they can transition easily.
I'm Natasha McGlon. I'm a medical student here at UNR, and there's a whole host of reasons why I'm supporting Bernie Sanders. He's been consistent on a wide array of social issues since the 1970s, including women's rights, the civil rights movement he was involved in. But something that's near and dear to my heart, being a medical student, is healthcare and everybody being able to access healthcare.
I've been following Elizabeth Warren since 2012, and she's remained consistent on two major things. First, beating the corruption in Washington. Now, we want to get all this good stuff done, Medicare for all, climate change policy, but we have to attack the root of the issue, not just the symptom. And that's where Elizabeth Warren comes in.
And so those were some examples of different representatives from these groups. And again, these weren't representatives from the campaigns themselves, but just supporters of these candidates. And I guess I'll reiterate, you know, for me, it was just so heartening to see that, you know, pretty much everyone you heard there was roughly around college age. So you have these very young voters who are very attuned to what's going on and who made pretty compelling speeches sort of on the fly to win over different voters to come join their support of their candidate.
No Amy Klobuchar in that group. And Mike Bloomberg was not one of the choices for the caucus goers.
No, he wasn't. So he missed the filing deadline. He wasn't an option for the caucus goers. Although I did run into one woman outside of the precinct who said going into it, she supported Klobuchar. That was her candidate. But she said, you know, she thinks that Bloomberg is the best to win, the best in terms of electability, the best to be able to defeat Trump. And there was a lot of that that I heard in terms of, you know, voters having their top choice, but then also kind of having their practical choice, the one that they thought could beat Trump.
So again, the way it went down, at least at this point, 96% of precincts reporting Bernie Sanders with about 47%, second place Joe Biden with about 20%. Again, back to that New York Times article, it says that the polls showed that Mr. Sanders won men and women, he won whites and Latinos, voters in all but the oldest age group. He carried union households, non-union households, self-identified liberal Democrats, but moderates, and some conservatives as well. Also those with college degrees and those without. So what were Bernie supporters saying? The one we just heard sounded super intense and focused on him as a candidate for a long time, not just a newcomer.
Yeah, they're one interesting thing about young supporters of Bernie, which is, you know, many of the ones I spoke to at UNR since this was a college campus. You know, this is a candidate that is, you know, much older than they are, has been in politics, you know, well before they were born. But they look at that kind of span of their support. And one voter I spoke to, Avery Wyatt, said to me, you know, he is a Native American, and he said, I really appreciate the long history that Sanders has focused on underserved communities.
Bernie's really been behind the indigenous rights all of his career, like he has with black civil rights, too. He really speaks for our people. Well, he doesn't speak for our people. He listens to our people. And what a lot of presidential candidates have done in the past is that they've listened, but they haven't done anything. But Bernie has a record of actually being with Native people, even before when Obama was Standing Rock with the pipelines. Bernie was in Standing Rock when Obama was kind of ignoring us. So I think that's what kind of separates him from the other candidates here, is that he's actually willing to listen to Natives and give them the voice before his own voice.
Another voter I spoke to, Elizabeth Aguilar, said for her, the top issue is health care, but she was thinking of it in kind of a, I guess you could say, like a intersectional sort of way, where health care isn't just about, you know, fixing injuries or addressing illnesses. It impacts many other areas of a candidate's policy and many other areas of life. So here's what she had to say about her support of Bernie.
I love the idea of Medicare for all because it kind of takes away that power that the private insurance companies have and, you know, hospitals and clinics have to charge such exorbitant prices. I do think that you would see a reduction in healthcare costs just because of that. So personally for me, I'm supporting Bernie Sanders just because he was the one that kind of got Medicare for all on the thoughts of all the other candidates. And I obviously, you know, that's probably not going to happen. Like, we're probably not going to get Medicare for all, but just the fact that someone is willing to bring that idea out and say, hey, this is what I think would benefit us, I think we have to support that candidate.
And two takeaways there that I thought were really interesting. One, after that bite, she elaborated that she believed that for immigrants and asylum seekers especially, they may not have access to quality health care. So she believed that Sanders' platform would be the best for them. The other thing that I thought was interesting was a recognition that this goal of Medicare for all may be aspirational. Mm-hmm. It may not be what ultimately shakes out, especially because, you know, a president has to work with Congress and it may not be a Congress that is of his party, his or her party. And so there's a recognition that Medicare for all may not be the result of a Bernie presidency, but that's a good aspirational sort of goal to reach for. And if there's something that is maybe not as progressive as Medicare for all, that's still acceptable for Elizabeth.
You are listening to CAP Radio State Government reporter Scott Rodd. He is talking about his experience in Reno on Saturday at the Nevada caucus. When I saw the results, I was reminded of a conversation with Gustavo Arellano a few weeks ago. He's Hispanic. He's a writer for the LA Times. He lives in Los Angeles. But I asked him at the time about the direction that he thought Latino voters, and obviously he's talking about the Los Angeles area, how they appeared to be going. It's worth listening to now in light of, I think, 51% of the Latino vote in Nevada went with Bernie Sanders. So here goes.
It's a generational divide that I see with Latinos. The young ones, they're Bernie bros. They're Tio. They hail Tio Bernie, Uncle Bernie. They just absolutely love Bernie. Then you have the Generation Xers. They're a little bit more moderate. I'm seeing them slowly go towards Michael Bloomberg, surprisingly enough, and some others with Elizabeth Warren. And then you have the older generation. They do not like what they view as a radicalism of Bernie and even Elizabeth Warren. So they're going with Tio Joe Biden. And it'll be interesting to see, though, if that divide is going to continue once there is a nominee with the Democratic Party. You would hope, at least for the Democrats, that they unite among their, you know, whoever's the final choice. But the heat of within the Latino electorate right now, it's pretty, just like this country, it's pretty divided right now.
That was Gustavo Arellano. He was actually talking with us about Kobe Bryant, and you might know that the public memorial for Bryant, his daughter, and the seven others who died in that helicopter crash is being held today at the Staples Center in Los Angeles. So, Scott, before we go, let's talk about Tom Steyer. He didn't qualify for the Las Vegas debate. He now has qualified for the debate Tuesday in Charleston, South Carolina. That's an important platform. And how are people talking about him in Nevada?
Yeah, Tom Steyer, he's still hanging on. I mean, he has the coffers to do it. He's got a lot of money to spend. I did run into one voter who talked about Tom Steyer. It was actually after hours when I was, quote unquote, off duty at a blackjack table, believe it or not. This is Reno after all.
This is full transparency.
Yeah, full transparency. You know, after I did my homework, I decided to go out in Reno with our photographer, Andrew Nixon, and, you know, grabbed a bite, stopped at a casino. And the dealer was talking to me about how she went out and did some early, she did an early caucus, and her support went for Steyer. And I asked her, yeah, that's interesting. Why? And she said, I think that, again, it came down to electability. She said, I think that he has the money to do it. I think that he has the platform to do it. And I thought that was very interesting. She also said, you know, her second choice was Bernie Sanders. And again, coming back to that practical decision, she said that she thought that Bernie had the best chance of beating Trump, especially with this momentum that he has. But she said she thought that Steyer would be the best candidate ultimately.
All right, Scott, thanks. I'll point people to the website for more of your reporting from the weekend.
Perfect. Thanks, Beth.
That is Cap Radio state government reporter Scott Rodd. And more of that reporting is at capradio.org. Next Monday, by the way, Ken Rudin, the political junkie, will be in Sacramento. He'll be sitting right here in the studio with me, and you can hear us on Insight Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. That will be during Cap Radio's Insight, but also during coverage of the California primary on Super Tuesday. You're listening to Insight on Cap Radio. Up next, the debut novel of April Davila. It's titled 142 Ostriches.